Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. This week, the rise and fall of virtual rapper FN Mecca. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Malt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
As ever, we're going to take a look back at some of the biggest and most interesting music industry news stories of the last week. A week when we learned that Harry Styles is not the new king of pop.
He certainly is not. And not only that, we also learned that nobody else making pop music today can ever be called by anybody the king of pop.
No.
Because Michael Jackson's nephew Taj would like everybody to know that that title died with his uncle and it can never be used ever again with anyone else. So that is official.
Yes. Now, this all came up because an interview with Harry Styles is the cover story on 14 international editions of the latest issue of Rolling Stone. It was on the cover of the UK version that Styles was described as the new king of pop. But, said Taj in a tweet, there is no new king of pop. You don't own the title, Rolling Stone, and you didn't earn it. My uncle did. Decades of dedication and sacrifice. The title has been retired.
He was keen to add that his beef was not with Harry Styles here, because obviously it wasn't Harry Styles who was claiming to be the new king of pop. This was entirely the fault of whoever wrote the headline on the cover of the UK version of Rolling Stone. And so he said in his tweet, no disrespect to Harry Styles. He's mega talented, don't you know? He would like to confirm. But give him his own unique title, Taj reckoned. Of course, Michael Jackson was known as the king of pop throughout a lot of his career. Well, presumably not at the start of his career, because he wasn't king of pop from the start, was he? He had to be king before he could be called king of pop, I'm guessing.
You have to work your way up the hierarchy.
But for as long as I was aware of Michael Jackson, I think, he was known as the king of pop. Perhaps more importantly, the Michael Jackson estate owns the trademark in the title king of pop, so actually, it hasn't been retired. They are still commercialising it and protecting the trademark. But the key thing is that Taj Jackson would like you to know that Harry Styles is not king of pop. Nobody is king of pop. Please stop calling people king of pop unless you are referring to the late king of pop, his uncle, Michael Jackson.
Yes. So as he said, you need to give him his own unique title and not just sticking new in front of the old one. And luckily for Rolling Stone, we came up with a whole list of possible titles, including the Crown Prince of the Charts, the Mayor of Music, or just not Michael Jackson.
So if anybody tuning into this edition of Setlist has a magazine that they edit with Harry Styles on the cover coming up, which you may well do, because
or anyone else.
Or anybody else that you consider to be the king of pop, then go and get that article from the CMU website. Andy will put a link in the notes, and we are providing plenty of alternatives to King of Pop for future Kings of Pop who cannot be Kings of Pop. Hopefully you followed all of that. The good news is, if you didn't follow any of that, it doesn't really matter, because this is not what we are here to talk about this week.
No. Later on, we'll be discussing the controversy surrounding the discovery that digital processes have been used by a supposedly analog-only reissues label for more than a decade. But first, a virtual rapper created supposedly using AI was dropped by Universal's Capitol label last week following accusations of racism. Activist group Industry Blackout accused the project of being a direct insult to the black community and our culture and an amalgamation of gross stereotypes, calling on the label to cut ties with the artist and issue an apology, which it did within hours of that statement.
Yeah, the statement of protest and the responding statement from Capitol came in very close succession. And in fact, everything to do with this story over the last 7 days has been incredibly fast moving. Capitol only announced the signing of this virtual rapper, FM Mecca, a couple of weeks ago, releasing a single from him at around about the same time. But the rapper had already amassed a considerable following before Universal and Capitol got involved, with more than 10 million followers over on TikTok. And the whole thing had actually been going for a few years. By that point, it had been developed by a company called Factory New. They first started putting out content from FM Mecha in 2019. Factory New, you might be interested to know, describes itself as a first of its kind next generation music company. They've certainly used a press release generating nonsense machine to come up with this. A first of its kind next generation music company specializing in virtual beings. But it was the deal, I think, with Universal and Capital that drew a lot more attention to the project beyond the existing following on TikTok. And lots of people did not find the announcement that Universal Capital getting involved with this virtual rapper as exciting as Capital initially did. Some because they just weren't interested in the supposed AR, VR, AI stuff that was going on. But some, like that campaign group, having more fundamental problems with the output of the project as well as the technology that may or may not have been used along the way.
Indeed. People were quick to point out that FN Mecha's supposedly AI-generated lyrics included uses of the N-word and found an old social media post seemingly making light of police brutality, while the spokesperson for the project, Factory News, Anthony Martini, is white, something people also took exception to. And in its statement, Industry Blackout said, "This digital effigy is a careless abomination and disrespectful to real people who face real consequences. For example, Gunner, a black artist who featured on a song by FN Mecha, is currently incarcerated for rapping the same type of lyrics this robot mimics. The difference is your artificial rapper will not be subjected to federal charges for such."
Any assumptions by critics that this was a cynical money-making endeavour were not really helped by an interview that Martini gave to Music Business Worldwide last year, in which he said, not to get all philosophical, but what is an artist today? Think about the biggest stars in the world. How many of them are just vessels for commercial endeavours? So, he explained, although voiced by a human, FN Mecha is an AI-driven robot rapper created using thousands of data points compiled from video games and social media. The songs, he added, are written using a proprietary AI technology that analyzes certain popular songs of a specified genre and generates recommendations for the various elements of song construction, lyrical content, chords, melody, tempo, sounds, etc.
So your view may be that this is an exciting use of technology, but it's also quite likely that you're sold on the idea that this is entirely cynical. And the signing to Capital possibly didn't help that either. In that MBW interview, Martini went to some effort to lay into the traditional label system, saying that it's outdated and has a terrible success rate. Factory News' approach, he reckoned, would have more success. And so anyone remembering that might have been surprised when Capital announced its latest signing earlier this month. As we said, Factory New had already been releasing music by FN Mecha, but signing to a major made a big splash. Capital trumpeted the rapper as the world's first AR artist to sign with a major label, which is debatable. The company excitedly told the world that with his over-the-top flexing and extravagant sense of style, he has rapidly amassed billions of impressions across the internet since the independent release of his singles Moonwalkin', Speed Demon and Internet.
An interesting statement to compare with the statement that Capital published last week, somewhat less excitable, when it said, bearing in mind this came quickly after that earlier statement that we mentioned at the start from Industry Blackout, the new statement from the Universal label said, "Capital has severed ties with the FM Mecha project, effective immediately. We offer our deepest apologies to the black community for our insensitivity in signing this project without asking enough questions about equity and the creative process behind it. We thank those who have reached out to us with constructive feedback in the past couple of days. Your input was invaluable as we came to the decision to end our association with this project."
Now, Anthony Martini from Factory New was, at least initially, less willing to accept that constructive criticism. In an interview with the New York Times, he said that the narrative that has been created around FM Mecha by his critics was not correct. He claimed that the whole thing is actually spearheaded by a human rapper who voices FN Mecha and is also black, he was keen to point out, and that Factory New is more akin to a traditional artist manager. FN Mecca, he said, is the creation of a black guy, not this malicious plan of white executives. It's literally no different from managing a human artist, except that it's digital. And, he added, that the team behind the project is actually one of the most diverse teams you can get. I'm the only white person involved, he said. He did admit, however, that the initial launch of the project did involve, quote, some trolling, but he said that they've tried to move away from that, adding, the question was, how do we break an avatar as a real artist and not a spectacle? It unfortunately turned into a spectacle anyway.
So basically, despite all of their best efforts, they ended up with a spectacle when they were first trying to push this rapper. Although it has to be said, when they did the deal with Universal and Capitol, and Capitol put out that announcement and then immediately released the first track, and Capitol was talking about all of that game-changing, all-new blah, blah, blah. I mean, it looked like they were still going for something of a spectacle. Not only that, but it has also been confirmed that no advance was paid by Capitol to the people behind the virtual rapper, which kind of suggests that for the major, it was all about short-term spectacle, getting the word out there, getting people excited about all of this nonsense, rather than working on some serious artist development with a human artist who had just happened to choose to portray himself to the public through a digital avatar.
No, but what of that human artist that Martini was referring to? Well, it turned out subsequently that there hasn't just been one human artist behind this project. After the Capitol deal was terminated, Atlanta rapper Carl the Hooligan came forward and said that he had been the original voice of FN Mecca, but had been pushed out of any financial gains made with the project, and indeed the project entirely. He said in a video on Instagram that he'd been approached to be the voice of this avatar that Factory New was developing, and had been promised equity in the company, a share of royalties and more. Intrigued by the creative possibilities, he agreed. And he also says that he wrote the lyrics for the early FN Mecca releases rather than just tweaking things spewn out by an AI. However, he went on that after providing those vocals, the company stopped contacting him. He said he'd made no money from the project and was never present in any meetings, including when it came to that Capitol deal.
Which, of course, was something of a different version of events compared to what Martini had said in that interview with the New York Times. Although, we said that this story has been moving quite rapidly in recent days, Martini then returned with a different version of events himself, which I guess were possibly more in sync with what this rapper was saying. And at that point, Martini declared that he was no longer working for Factory New. He was not aware that Carl the Hooligan had been ripped off in the way that he said. And he also started to backtrack on some of what he previously said about the technology behind all this project.
Yeah, he revealed various things about his involvement with the company and how the FN Mecca project worked. Not least that it relied on AI a lot less than he'd originally claimed. Although he's previously been named as a co-founder of Factory New, he said that he'd actually joined the company in 2020 after the release of the first two FN Mecca singles, Moonwalking and Internet. And, he wanted to point out, after that police brutality themed social media post had been published. He also claimed that he'd only learned last week that Carl the Hooligan had been cut out of the project, insisting that, while I was involved, artists on the project were always compensated fairly and participated in the revenue from their work. In this statement, as you said, Martini said he was unaware of Carl's story until he spoke about it this week. And he added in a subsequent interview with Pitchfork that he's since been in touch with the rapper to try to make things right. He also said that the things he told Music Business Worldwide last year about how the project worked were not entirely true. He said, I take full responsibility for the lack of transparency and confusion that my comments about AI elements in Mecca's music may have caused. Those quotes were from a 2021 interview and were meant to create intrigue and provide cover for songs at the time which weren't ready for scrutiny. FN Mecca's vocals have always been written and performed by humans, which in this case have been black voices, to be clear.
So yeah, lots of confusion around the timeline of all of this, because I'm pretty sure maybe I need to draw them on a diagram, that some of the things that Martini has been saying don't seem to line up, but maybe I'm just getting confused from these different interviews. Also interesting, I guess, isn't it, that What they are saying is that some of the issues that have been raised by certain people with some of the language and themes that have appeared in FM Mecca's music and social media posts, basically saying, actually, they didn't come from some committee or some AI or some database system. They were just the words of a human being, and therefore we should see them to be less controversial, less contentious. Anyway, a very confusing story, but we should stress that although Martini has backtracked on quite a lot of what he previously said, he is still gung-ho around the idea of the music industry increasingly having virtual digital avatar performers. Now, whether or not we'll ever get to the point where those are truly ultimately controlled by AI and all the music is created by AI, who knows? But he was almost saying in this most recent interview that he's most excited about the idea of digital avatars and virtual artists so that genuine human music makers who are making great music but don't want to be up front on stage, they don't want to be in their videos, have another way to get their music out there.
Yeah, he concluded his statement by saying, "There are many lessons to be learned from this experience, and I believe we have opened important conversations about entertainment in the digital age, the music industry, the metaverse, and what art in general looks like in the future. Too many artists never realise their dreams because of the labels put on them by society. The music industry is full of talented singers, rappers and producers who never get a shot because a corporation doesn't think they have the right look, or they are too old, or not marketable enough. Whether it's prejudices they face or simply the artist not feeling comfortable with the body they were born in, virtual characters have the potential to be a true equaliser and the next frontier in representation in the arts. That is how virtual avatars can and should enable more artists to have a platform, not fewer. Throughout my career, whether as an artist manager, a label head or an executive, I've been consistent in my mission to empower creatives and provide alternatives to unscrupulous norms in the music business. I will continue to do that."
Now, we don't know whether all of this is a genuine realisation by Martini that he was involved in a project that wasn't as great as he previously thought, for various different reasons. Or maybe this is simply damage limitation for someone who has held a number of roles in the music industry, including briefly being CEO of Royalties Marketplace Royalty Exchange last year. And maybe he is aware that his next job or project in music might be tarnished about all of this. But his statement did bring to an end a very dramatic week for the FN Mecca project, which, after 4 years of development, seems to have come crashing to the ground really rather quickly.
And finally, on this edition of Setlist, a lawsuit has been filed following recent revelations that Chicago-based Mobile Fidelity Sound Lab, a label which specialises in pressing up high-quality reissues of records for the audiophile community, has not been entirely honest about its mastering processes.
Yeah, so those revelations originally came up last month in a YouTube video that was posted by a guy called Mike Esposito, who runs a Phoenix-based record store called The Ingroove. Now, he accused the label, which is often referred to as MoFi, which is a bit snappier than Mobile Fidelity Sound Lab, so I think we'll probably stick with MoFi through the rest of this item. He accused MoFi of using digital technology in its vinyl mastering process, while advertising on its website and when it was sending these reissues out to record shops, that these records, these vinyl releases, were purely analog recordings. And that might not sound like a big deal to most people listening to this podcast. Providing it sounds good, does it matter if there was a bit of digital stuff going on behind the scenes when your analog vinyl records were mastered? But for the audiophile community, actually having checked out a few audiophile message boards in the last week, they are kind of split on how big a scandal this really is. But for some of the audiophile community, at least, that digital processing in an analog recording, it is a big deal, honest.
Yeah, in the words of the lawsuit filed in relation to these revelations, defendant advertised the records as being purely analog recordings, i.e. directly from the master recording or original analog tapes, without any sort of digital mastering process. Defendant also charged a price premium for the records based on the same. And while that used to be true, the lawsuit adds, since 2011, defendant has been using digital mastering or digital files, specifically direct stream digital technology, in its production chain. Worse still, defendant continued to misrepresent to consumers that it did not use digital mastering or otherwise failed to disclose the use of digital mastering while still charging the same price premium for the records as if they were entirely analog recordings.
And if you're still not entirely sure why this matters, well, the lawsuit goes on to say, this is where the audiophile message blogs and stuff I was looking at this week, they weren't entirely sure on whether or not they agreed with this, but some people do, and this is what the lawsuit says. The lawsuit says, analog records are coveted not only for their superior sound quality, but also for their collectability. Original recording tapes age, so only a limited number of analog recordings can be produced. Further, because analog tapes are those used to record songs in the studio, a record cut from the original analog tapes is as close to the studio recording as one can get. That was a statement which some people were taking issue with. But anyway, digital recordings, by contrast, the lawsuit continued, do not carry as much value because they can be reproduced infinitely. Once a digital recording is made, it can be copied as many times as a person desires. Thus, when defendant began using a digital mastering process in its records as opposed to purely analog, it inherently produced less valuable records. And yet, of course, the allegation goes, actually, I'm not sure anybody is denying this. It continued to sell these products as if they were purely analog. And the lawsuit says, in doing so, continue to charge that premium price that you would expect for purely analog recordings.
Now, this lawsuit has been filed by a guy called Adam Stiles, who has bought various MoFi releases over the years, though he's seeking a class action status for his litigation, so to benefit anyone else who has bought a vinyl record sold by the label where digital technology was used in the mastering process, but not declared. The lawsuit states, had defendant not misrepresented that the records were purely analog recordings or otherwise disclosed that the records included digital mastering in their production chain, plaintiff and punitive class members would not have purchased the records or would have paid less for the records than they did.
Now, as you mentioned, although this all went legal last week, which is why we're interested in it, because, you know, it's litigation that gets us interested at CMU. But the YouTube video about all of this, making these revelations, was uploaded last month. So within audiophile communities and the kinds of people who like to buy these records, there had already been a lot of conversations about these revelations in the weeks prior to the lawsuits being filed. And among other things, MoFi president Jim Davis had responded to the controversy as it was unfolding. And this was a statement that he initially issued, basically admitting that they had been using this digital technology and that they hadn't declared it. We at Mobile Fidelity Sound Lab, he wrote, are aware of customer complaints regarding use of digital technology in our mastering chain. We apologise for using vague language, allowing false narratives to propagate, and for taking for granted the goodwill and trust our customers place in the Mobile Fidelity Sound Lab brand. Yeah, MoFi is much better, isn't it? It's a bit of a mouthful. We recognise our conduct has resulted in both anger and confusion in the marketplace, his statement went on. Moving forward, we are adopting a policy of 100% transparency regarding the provenance of our audio products. We are immediately working on updating our websites, future printed materials and packaging, as well as providing our sales and customer service representatives with all the details they need.
Davis then gave an interview to The Absolute Sound and confirmed that MoFi started using Direct Stream Digital, or DSD, technology in 2011, initially on a pressing of Tony Bennett's I Left My Heart in San Francisco. He added, over time, we mastered progressively more titles using the DSD archival capture step. Sourcing information for all MoFi vinyl titles is being added to the MoFi website daily, and a complete discography will be posted on the site. So, there you go. It remains to be seen what extent the controversy around MoFi's past misleading statements about its mastering processes has on sales of the company's releases in the future. Meanwhile, it will also be interesting to see how Stiles' class action lawsuit progresses. Among other things, he's suing for breach of express and implied warranty, unjust enrichment, and fraud.
So as I say, opinion seems to be divided within the community of the sorts of people who care about these things and who buy these records. Everyone agrees that they were wrong to claim it was a truly analog process when it wasn't. I don't think there's any disagreement on that. I think we've got to the point now where the people who work at MoFi would also agree with that. But whether or not the legal claim is valid and whether or not all the things they're saying about the difference between it coming from a truly analog recording and the digital and blah, 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 whether or not that is valid, well, there is a division of opinion on that. It'll be interesting to see how it proceeds in court. We should just clarify, in case there was any doubt, because we like 100% transparency here at CMU, that this podcast is not a purely analog recording. There is a little bit of digital technology involved in the creation and production and mastering of this podcast, and we can only apologize for that. But at least we're being 100% transparent about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the split was, I mean, there's various different reasons for that split in opinion. But I think one of them was between the people who buy these records to listen to them, who a lot of them were saying, well, it's annoying that it's not fully analog like it said, but if it sounds good, then what does that matter? And then there was another group of people who, as we said, these are collectible items, they're, you know, short runs. And so people buy them and never unseal them. They buy them to sell them on at a later date for a profit. And those people are annoyed because now, presumably, that investment is, well, if not gone entirely, it's not going to be as good as it would have been had MoFi been upfront about what they were selling.
Yeah, so if this lawsuit does get the class action status that is being sought, then maybe the former contingent you mentioned there won't join in, but the latter contingent seeking to get a return on their investment definitely will do. So almost certainly a story we will return to at some point in the future.
But that's all we've got time for on this edition of Setlist. If you want to read more about anything we've discussed here this week, go to the show notes. You'll find them in your podcast player now or at setlistpodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe to the show if you've not done that already. Rate and review the show as well. That's very helpful. Thank you. And if you've got anything you want to tell us, email us setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. It's presented by Andy Malt and Chris Cook. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.